I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, Texas is experiencing a homeowner's insurance crisis. It's becoming more and more expensive to get covered, and a number of insurance companies are leaving the state. This is because of the rising number of natural disasters that are hitting Texas. More floods, hurricanes, wildfires, hailstorms. The insurance companies are losing money here, even with the increased cost to homeowners. This is adding to the cost of homeownership overall and pushing the dream of owning a home farther away. A growing number of homeowners are turning to the Texas Fair Plan, the state's insurer of last resort. It provides minimum coverage, but at a steep price. Have you been hit by the Texas home insurance crisis? This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Heading into the recent regular legislative session, Texas lawmakers promised to tackle the state's rising home insurance cost. But after 140 days in Austin, major reforms stalled and there were some minor tweaks. Those were passed. So don't expect much to change with the ongoing Texas homeowners insurance crisis. From 2015 to 2023, statewide premiums jumped 57%, driven mainly by severe storms, rising construction costs, and inflation. In 2022, premiums rose nearly 20% and then shot up another 20% in 2023. So to help us understand this crisis, why these costs continue to rise, what this means for homeowners and the state, we're joined by Mark Friedlander. He is the Director of Corporate Communications with the Insurance Information Institute. And Mark, welcome to The Source.
Thanks so much for having me today. Really appreciate it.
Our phone lines are open. If you got a question, a comment, you want to give us a report on what's happening with your homeowner's insurance, did your insurer run off and having trouble finding a new one? What are you doing? Give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So, Mark, we're having this conversation in the context of what happened in the recent flooding along the Upper Guadalupe River, Kerr County. There were a lot of homes were lost, and many folks there were not properly covered. They thought maybe they had home insurance, but then they realized they were not covered. What generally happens in a situation like that?
What many people realize is flood insurance is a standard exclusion in all home, renters, and condo insurance policies. It's a non-included peril, and you need to have separate coverage, either through the National Flood Insurance Program or a private flood insurer. It's the largest insurance gap we see not only in Texas, but across the country today. When we look at Texas as a whole, only about 7% of Texas homeowners have a flood policy. Nationally, it's at about 6%. And typically, we see most of those in coastal communities prone to hurricanes and storm surge. So when you look at inland communities like Kerr County, we're talking about 2 to 2.5% of homeowners. So virtually no coverage. And when you're in that situation, it makes it very difficult to recover from a tragedy like this. You need to rely on the potential of federal funds as well as state funds. But even when you look at something like FEMA emergency grants, that's not a replacement for insurance coverage. It will give you perhaps a few $1,000s to help with immediate expenses, but it's not going to rebuild your home. And we constantly remind homeowners across the country, you need to have flood insurance no matter where you live, because it floods everywhere. 90% of U.S. natural disasters involve flooding. Nobody is immune to flooding. Two summers ago, we had severe floods in the desert of California from a tropical system that came off the Pacific. In the middle of summer, when it never rains in California, well, it does rain in California, like it rains in Texas and every other state, you need to have flood coverage.
Right. So one thing about getting that flood coverage, the National Flood Insurance Program, I mean, that cost is going up as well. It's not cheap, and you have to pay it all at once. It's not something that's broken up in the payments. It's not really user-friendly.
Well, actually, I'm going to push back a little
on
that.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
We've looked at the data, and in most areas of the country, you could purchase a National Flood Insurance Program policy for $40 to $50 a month. Not very expensive. Yes, you do need to pay it all at once. You can't pay it in installments like your auto insurance policy, but it's really reasonable. Even here where I'm based in Florida, you could get flood insurance for $40 to $50 a month.
That's if you break it down, but you're not given the opportunity to pay it in monthly installments, right?
Right. That's the issue.
Okay. That's
right,
a barrier.
I'm just giving it as an example.
That's
you
a
have
barrier.
To pay it all at once. I want to clarify that what I'm saying is if you divide the premium by 12 is $40 to $50 a month. But no, you can't break it down like an auto policy. That is accurate.
Yeah. And so, you know, you're told, okay, you got to come up with $784 all at once. And a lot of people may not have that.
It's challenging, clearly, but you have to weigh the pros and the cons of the situation. Could you afford to rebuild your house out of pocket? Most people in the United States can't. And yes, it is an expense, another expense that a household does not want to take on, especially with all the inflationary pressures we're seeing today in Texas and across the country. But you have to weigh the good against the bad.
Right.
What will you do if you suffer a loss? How are you going to handle that?
Yeah, so let me push back. Okay, I know you don't make these policies. I guess this is done in Congress or something. But, you know, if we want people to buy this insurance to protect them, and which stabilizes the economy and increases, you know, recovery from disasters, wouldn't we want to make it easier for people to do so? And having an installment plan put in place would probably increase those numbers that we're so concerned about, the low coverage.
Well, I can't speak for the federal government, but I could tell you from the private insurance market, private flood policies do offer payment plans. So that's why when we tell people, shop for flood insurance, get a few quotes, include private companies, because it's a totally different system. Private companies do offer installments, and they're very price competitive. And in many cases, private policies offer more coverage. For example, the NFIP doesn't provide temporary living expenses, whereas private policies do. So if you're displaced from your home and you have NFIP coverage, you have zero coverage for temporary living. Not the same with private policies. So there are options. Mm-hmm. You don't have to necessarily buy your flood insurance through the federal government.
Do you people know they live in a flood zone typically?
They typically should. Do they? I can't speak for every citizen, of course.
Sure.
But flood zones are clearly defined. But here's the issue. Flooding occurs everywhere. People just look at the high-risk flood zones like the coastal areas of Texas. Yes, we know those are high-risk. We're going to get storm surge from incoming tropical systems. But you don't have to live in a high-risk flood zone to incur a flood. And that's what many people don't realize is you're not immune to flood no matter where you live. It's a risk in every county, in every state across the U.S.
But when you buy a home and you get a mortgage, the mortgage has that requirement to have homeowners insurance, but not flood insurance, right?
No, not necessarily true. If you live in a high-risk flood zone, have a mortgage, your lender will require you to have flood insurance as well. So it is required in certain areas. But once again, those are primarily high-risk coastal zones.
Huh. But flooding happens outside of those zones.
Well, that's the issue. We've seen catastrophic floods, not only, of course, most recently in Hill Country, but across the country. Yeah. We saw tragic floods in the Appalachians last year from Hurricane Helene. We've seen numerous severe flooding events in Missouri and Kentucky. It happens everywhere. And it has nothing to do with tropical systems. Sometimes it's the moisture from a tropical storm, but in many cases, it's just a severe spring or summer storm that causes flooding.
Okay, we got to take a break here. Our number is 833-877-8255. And we're going to get Claiborne on the air when we come back from the break. Stay with us.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company. They are committed to helping policyholders build strong and thriving businesses through their exceptional service. More at texasmutual.com/texansdeliver. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
Hi, this is Ashley Alvarado, President and CEO of Texas Public Radio. Here in South Central Texas, we know the power of community. We show up and stand strong together. That's why we've created TPR's Resiliency Fund, to protect the future of independent journalism, classical music, and meaningful conversations that connect us. And right now, your donation has double the impact. Every dollar you contribute is matched by Texas Cavaliers Charitable Foundation. That match also benefits the incredible work of Camp Camp, a Kerrville nonprofit enriching the lives of people with disabilities. With our resiliency drive, we met the moment. Now, let's build the future. Donate today at tpr.org/resiliency.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The recent devastating flood that hit the Hill Country over the 4th of July holiday serves as a stark reminder of the state's evolving risk profile. According to the Insurance Information Institute, they put out a Texas Issues brief. The flooding was caused by remnant moisture from the Tropical Storm Barry. We saw 20 inches of rain hit some parts of the Hill Country, creating terrible flooding, destruction, and loss of life. We're talking about homeowners insurance. There's a crisis in Texas. Even if you don't live in these places, you're seeing your premiums go up. You're seeing insurers leave Texas. We're having more and more people turn to the insurer of last resort in Texas. What's that like? If you've got a question or a comment about what's happening to your home insurance, give us a call. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And let's go to Claiborne. And Claiborne, you're on the air.
Hi. Well, I have two things. What you were just discussing, when we were getting ready to buy the house out in Encino Rio in 2017, I pulled up the satellite maps. I pulled up the floodplain maps. The first floor of that house is 968 feet above sea level. We're at one of the highest points in that area. So water would be flowing downhill. I study that kind of stuff. I'm always situationally aware. When we bought the house, our homeowner's insurance was $1,600 a year. 3 years later, suddenly it was $3,000-something. And I just got a call from the broker. This renewal, it's going to be $6,000-something.
Right. So, Claiborne, thank you for that update. Mark Friedman, what do you make of that?
Well, first, flood risk has nothing to do with your home insurance. That's something I want to point out. Because flood is written as a separate risk, it has zero impact on the cost of home insurance. What is driving the high cost of home insurance in Texas is all the other perils that the state has been facing. Tornadoes, hail events, derechos, severe winter storms. Texas has more billion-dollar severe weather and climate events than any other state. Last year, there were 20 of those. When we look back at data historically since 1980, Texas has experienced 170 billion dollar loss events, the highest in the US. Additionally, one of the measures that insurance companies use, it's called a combined ratio. It is looking at your claims and expenses paid versus the premiums collected. And we took a look at the data just in the last few years. We looked at the last 4 years because the last 4 years have been very heavy loss years primarily. And the average combined ratio has been 111 rather. So what does that mean? That means $1.11 paid in claims and expenses for every dollar paid in premiums. Going back to 2021, it was 141.3, meaning $14.13 for every dollar in claims. That is a losing formula. When you have year after year of losses for home insurers, They have no choice but to raise rates. The only other option is they're going to leave the market, or they're going to greatly reduce their market share. And we know that some insurers have cut back a bit, particularly in the coastal counties of Texas, because of the high risk. But this is what's driving the high cost of home insurance in the state. Losses year after year after year. And right now, according to S&P Global Market Intelligence, the most recent industry data we have, Texas ranks fourth highest with average premium at $5,180. What states are more expensive than Texas, according to S&P? Oklahoma, Nebraska, and Kansas. What do all those states have in common? Severe weather, particularly tornado outbreaks. So we see a trend here. When we see high impact, severe weather loss events, that's going to drive the cost of insurance.
I just got an email from the Texas Department of Insurance, and they wanted to make a couple of points, saying that nearly 160 companies sell homeowners insurance policies in Texas. They say the count has held since 2022, and it's also up more than 20% from a decade ago. So they're saying companies are not leaving Texas. And also they said, according to our data, the average annual premium for homeowners insurance in Texas in 2024 was $3,291. And that's different than the number I think you just gave us.
Yeah, number from S&P, why there's a difference, I can't explain it. I don't know how they're determining the data. S&P is usually a reliable third-party source, so we use them quite regularly in our commentary. But the good news is, like I said, I can't confirm or deny which average premium is accurate, but I can tell you Texas remains a very vibrant home insurance market. And I have seen similar data that there are well over 150 companies running the state. I believe the Department of Insurance said over 160. It's the second largest property casualty market in the U.S. And companies continue to write business in the state compared to other what we call risk crisis states like California and Louisiana, where companies have pulled back. That's not the case in Texas. There still is a very vibrant market, and consumers have a choice. That's really the point we want to make here, is the caller that you had a few minutes ago. If they're seeing a large increase in their premium, shop your policy. Call your local insurance agent. Ask for a few quotes, because there are many companies available. In fact, when we look at the breakdown of the Texas market, more than 50% of the market is controlled by five major national insurers. So major national insurers have a strong presence in the state. Number one is State Farm, followed by Allstate, USAA, Liberty Mutual, and Farmers Insurance Group, well over 50% of the market. So the major national insurers are committed to the market, as are other national insurers and regional insurers. There are insurers.
But they're in the business to make money.
Right, exactly. And they need to charge a actuarially sound price. You know, they can't continue to operate at a loss year after year. So this is what's driving premium increases in general.
Okay, callers, Mark. And Mark, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you. I would love to see our lawmakers step in and make flood insurance mandatory for anyone that has a mortgage. And so the thought would just be, the more people you have paying into the program, you'd have us maybe all subsidizing the rates a little bit, get more money into the program, lower the rates by having more people participating. And that way you're making it more affordable and getting more people covered. People don't do the right thing. And I think if the lawmakers would step in and make it mandatory, that would be a good thing overall for society.
All right, Mark, thank you for that point. Is that something, does any state do anything like that, Mark Friedlander, with the Insurance Information Institute, require homeowners have flood insurance?
Yes, in the state of Florida, the state-backed insurer of last resort, which is Citizens Property Insurance Corporation, now requires all their policyholders to purchase flood insurance in order to get the policy, which includes windstorm and other coverages. So Florida is the only state where this takes place. But backing up on the National Flood Insurance Program and mortgage requirements, as I said earlier, if you live in a high-risk zone and you have a mortgage, you are required to have flood insurance. So that already is a requirement at the federal level. But one of the big problems we've seen with the National Flood Insurance Program is they had a very antiquated rating system for many years until they recently changed to what they call risk rating 2.0, which is a more actuarially sound approach. NFIP has always operated at a huge deficit because they were not collecting enough premiums to pay out when claims took place. Congress has bailed them out numerous times. In fact, they needed a loan from the U.S. Treasury just in the past few months to pay for flood claims from the 2024 hurricane season. So it's clearly been not a very positive model for flood insurance. And that's why, you know, I think it's really important to point out how the private flood insurance market is growing its presence in the country. About a third of all policies written today are through the private flood market. It continues to grow, and it is a viable alternative for many who are seeking flood insurance.
Okay, let's go to Carl on the phones. And Carl, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. Hey, my grandfather told me a long time ago that homeowners insurance was the biggest scam of all. That when you get finished paying your mortgage, you stop paying that money and you put it in a savings account so you can take care of yourself. Because all these people are doing is lining their pockets with your money. And then they're complaining when they have to pay out to people who are insured. And it just never stops. Why are we bailing out these insurance companies when they're only paying out to a few, while you have thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people paying into the system? Where's all the money going?
All right. Carl, bring us some good, interesting points. Mark Freelander, is it a scam? Is he right that if you just banked all that money, you could self-insure?
I appreciate his opinion, but clearly not a scam. The facts speak for themselves. Insurers are paying more in claims and expenses in the state of Texas than they are taking in through premiums. The data proves the point, and that is a losing model. It's why home insurance premiums continue to increase. And the other issue you brought up was, okay, you're done paying your mortgage. You no longer have an insurance requirement. You now put your money in the bank instead of buying home insurance. I'll explain why that is a bad solution. We saw this happen quite frequently in Florida after Hurricane Ian 3 years ago. A high-end Category 4 caused about $60 billion in insured losses. In fact, the second largest natural catastrophe loss from an insurance perspective in U.S. history. And many homeowners that took that approach regretted doing it. They said, we don't have enough money to rebuild our house. It was a great idea, and I've saved, say, $50,000, even $100,000, but it's going to cost $400,000 to rebuild my home. What am I going to do? I have a $300,000 shortfall. For most Americans, it's not a realistic option.
And you could be hit with a natural disaster the day after you cancel your policy.
That's true, too. I mean, yeah, I mean, the home, because I don't want to look into the mind of the caller, but is he thinking, okay, can he save money for 2 years, 5 years, 10 years? It could happen tomorrow. Cancel your policy today, and then a tornado or a hurricane strikes. You can't prepare for that. And the other issue is, you know, we've talked a bit about, you know, replacement costs. I think you mentioned it at the top of the show. We did a study at the Insurance Information Institute that showed replacement costs have increased a cumulative 55% over a four-year period. We looked at pre-pandemic 2019 through 2022. That was due to supply chain disruption, especially during the first 2 years of the pandemic, combined with escalating costs of construction materials and labor shortages. And another factor we haven't talked about yet is the man-made factor of legal system abuse. We've seen this in Texas. We've seen this in other states where billboard attorneys get involved with claims. You just drive along the highways and you see the billboards. Call us first. Don't settle with your insurer. And because billboard attorneys are driving more litigation related to storm claims, that's driving up the cost for everybody, because that's an expense that insurers have to absorb. And when they get hit with those type of additional expenses, what do? They pass it along to the consumer. So we have to think about all the factors that are driving the cost of insurance. It's not just storms. There are other factors as well.
All right. We got a lot more questions about the homeowners insurance crisis in Texas and what can be done about it. How is it impacting people? Why having a insurance system that works for homeowners and for the insurance companies, why this is important for a productive, stable economy. You can call in with your questions at 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK, and we're going to be right back after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the Texas homeowners insurance crisis in Texas. People are paying more and more for homeowners insurance, and we're seeing more natural disasters and flooding happening across the state. This is something that if you don't have flood insurance, you might want to consider getting some. If you can afford it, it's, you know, there's a lot to consider. And maybe you'll never need it, but then maybe you'll sleep better at night, possibly. We're joined by Mark Friedlander. He is with the Insurance Information Institute. And let's go to a caller. Our number is 833-877-8255. And Frank. Hey, Frank, you're on the air.
I was wondering, can the insurance companies and the government kind of work together and identify where dams can be built? Seems like water is going to be more valuable than oil pretty soon. And with all these houses being built, it seems like some dams might stop a lot of this flash flooding and loss of life and property.
All right, Frank, thanks for that. Not really sure if the insurance companies can talk about that, but you know, how well do insurance companies or the overall, do they work with identifying what are the locations where people are at high risk?
Today, insurance companies are focused on predicting and preventing losses. It used to be the approach of detect and repair. Now it's predict and prevent. What that means is mitigating risk. And insurers do work with state and local leaders on mitigating risk. It is an ongoing process. And once again, mitigating risk, what does that mean? Less losses, less claims. That's better for everybody because, as I've talked about numerous times here, the volume of losses and is really one of the main drivers in terms of the cost of insurance. If you reduce those drivers of losses, it's an improved situation for all consumer. So it is an approach that the insurance industry is taking today.
Well, let's talk about the increased weather events. Texas has seen a surge in severe weather events like hurricanes, hailstorms, wildfires, tornadoes. These all lead to more claims, higher payouts from the insurance companies. And they're saying we're having these more frequent, more intense weather events due to climate change. So what do these insurers think about the fact that we're not taking climate change seriously?
Insurers are focused on climate risk. This is how they model. In most cases, the modeling is very effective. Sometimes it doesn't catch every potential hazard, but in most cases it does. And that's how the pricing is determined. The pricing models factor in climate risk. So this is why insurers are charging the premiums that they have, because they have to factor in climate risk. So this is all in the modeling system. But one of the points you just made is really interesting one I want to point out. Many people who live in Texas don't realize it's one of the highest risk states in the country for wildfires. In fact, Texas ranks third for homes at risk for extreme wildfire, 244,617 homes at extreme, or rather, I guess best way to say it, risk for extreme wildfire loss. That's according to our most recent issues brief that you referenced earlier. And that's only behind California and Colorado. When people look at wildfires, what do they think? Primarily West Coast, Colorado, some other mountain states. They don't really think of Texas, but Texas is very high risk. So basically, when we look at Texas and all the perils that the state has seen in recent years, it's virtually every peril you could think of but volcanoes. You name it, Texas has had a loss event or multiple loss events from that type of peril.
Next caller, Nick. And Nick, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. First-time caller, long-time listener, as a 35-year-old first-time homeowner that moved from Colorado to Texas in 2017. Our neighbors and my wife's family that's here says it never snows, and it snowed like three times since we've lived here. With that being said, being a younger side on the homeowner spectrum here, our costs have increased dramatically since 2017 between property taxes and homeowners insurance, especially with like flood control projects driving up property tax or property taxes for county flood control stuff. What's my future going to be like? Is it just going to continue to go up? Are we going to look at a new system, or I guess some guidance here for our future outlook?
All right, Nick. So what, you're not a, you don't want to predict the future,
right?
Mark, I'm sure.
Exactly.
But the trends are, you know, I will do that. You know, look at the trends.
Trends are increasing costs. But one point I want to make is, it was some good comments from the caller. Infrastructure projects that drive up your property taxes, that's not insurance. He was kind of mixing subjects there, so I just want to make sure we're clear.
Yeah, but you know, still a lot more money coming out of my pocket.
Yeah, it's still a household expense, and there are taxes on top of insurance and other household expenses. We realize that. But once again, if we continue to see significant loss activity year after year, it's going to be a driver of higher home insurance. That's not only in Texas, but in any other state that is seeing this level of loss activity. And like the caller said, it's not just the hazards we've been talking about, but we hadn't really talked about the winter hazards. We had that severe ice storm across the state of Texas just a few years ago, the largest winter storm insured loss event in U.S. history. And it had caused major problems with the electrical grid, as we know, but it caused a lot of damage. And nobody would ever think of that. All across the state, it wasn't just the northern part of Texas. It was all across the state. We are seeing the type of losses that we've never seen before, not only in Texas, but in other states. The risks are growing, not decreasing.
So Texas is the only Gulf Coast state that doesn't offer incentives like grants for homeowners to get mandatory insurance discounts if they can make their homes more resilient. So this is despite the fact that Texas leads the country in losses from catastrophic weather. States like Alabama, they have a fortified program where the state offers grants to homeowners to upgrade their roofs, requires that insurance give them discounts, and they are stabilizing the state's home insurance market with this program. This is something that came up in the most recent legislative session. It was offered as a bill. They are talking about a $500 million pool of money to jumpstart this program, but it didn't pass because, you know, the budget writers were saying, no, we don't want to spend the money on that, even though Texas has this huge, you know, billions and billions and billions of dollars in our rainy day fund and in a surplus. So, you know, what a program that would offer grants to homeowners who live in high-risk areas to fortify their homes, how does that help the insurance market?
We have done a lot of work with the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety, which created the Fortified program, and it is a proven fact that fortified homes withstand severe weather events. In fact, we look back at Hurricane Michael, which struck the Florida Panhandle back in 2018. The only homes that remained standing with minimal damage or no damage at all were the fortified homes. And here's the other point to this. Many of those homes were built through Habitat for Humanity. Those were volunteer builds. Those were the homes that were standing. The million-dollar homes that weren't fortified were destroyed. So it's not the cost of the home or how much you invested in the home. It's the type of construction. And even just fortifying your roof, which is a very simple, cost-effective process. Basically, it's tying down your roof, making it more secure to wind events. That could prevent a loss. And in our opinion, it's really short-sighted when lawmakers don't want to move forward with this because it's been a great success story in Alabama. Alabama has the largest volume of certified fortified homes in the country, and it has kept the cost of home insurance in check. It significantly reduces premium because it's built into the state regulations as to how much of a discount you get for your home when it is under the fortified standard. It's a great approach for resilience. And we're certainly hopeful that in the future, Texas lawmakers will look at this. We know some of the other coastal states are starting to move in this direction. Louisiana has begun a program. Mississippi has begun a program. So it is catching on in some of the neighboring states here.
So real quickly, there was this bill that was filed. So what does your credit score have to do with how much I should pay for my homeowner's insurance? That is something that happens in Texas. If you have a bad credit score, they're going to ding you more on your homeowner's insurance. And there was a bill filed in the last legislative session by San Antonio State Representative Trey Martinez Fisher that would have prohibited insurers from using credit scores in auto and homeowner's rates and making those decisions. Other states have banned that practice, citing research that shows that families with bad credit can pay hundreds of dollars more for auto insurance despite having the same good driving record as those with excellent credit. And so, but that bill was left pending in committee. It did not pass. It did not become law. It's just something I want to point out that there are things that can happen in the legislature with lawmakers, with good government, that can address some of the issues that we're facing. Making people pay more for home insurance for their credit score? Really? All right, so we're going to take a break here. We're going to get some of these callers back on the air. Mona, you'll be up next. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. Mark Friedlander is with us. He is the Director of Corporate Communications with the Insurance Information Institute. And let's go to Mona. Mona, hi. You're on the air.
Hello. How are you doing?
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to, actually, you really just spoke to my question in the previous segment. My question was about having fortified roofs, having fortified homes, water detection systems in the home, and how that can actually assist the homeowner with reducing premium, if that's the case, or is it just continuing to line the pockets of the insurance companies with less claims because, you know, the homeowners are actually taking care of their home. But really the intention, of course, is to make the home safer and to reduce the possibility of a claim.
And also save lives, save your family's life.
Right. How are insurance companies, taking that into consideration when determining premiums for individuals, who are taking that consideration?
All right, Mona, I think it's a really good question, and there's more here we need to dig into. So, Mark, there's no requirement for insurance companies to do that other than the invisible hand of the free market, I imagine.
Some companies are already giving discounts for fortifying your home. I don't have all the details, but according to our research, some companies are voluntarily doing this, meaning they're not being required by the state. But we think it is a good approach to have a state mandated program for resilience, and using the fortified standards, as I said earlier, has worked very successfully in other Gulf Coast states. And it will save the consumers on their premium, because if it's mandated by the state, you will get a discount. So it not only reduces risk, it improves safety, as you just mentioned, but it also could lead to a premium discount. So it's a win for everybody. And we think it's a great approach to take it. And like I said, we hope Texas lawmakers will look at this again when they next meet.
Okay, so I understand that you wanted to talk about the insurance, about the credit score, why that's important.
Yeah, so let me explain this. So first of all, insurers don't use credit scores. They use what's called a credit-based insurance score, which takes some credit data, but they create their own proprietary insurance score. Why is this important? Actuarial data proves that those who handle their finances better are less risk, meaning they will file less claims. Those who handle their finances poorly and thus would have a lower credit-based insurance score, they are higher risk, meaning they will file more claims. To eliminate credit as a rating factor, that puts everybody on an equal playing field. And I think you'd already mentioned this. That means the good drivers or the safer homeowners are subsidizing the bad drivers and the unsafe homeowners, if we're looking both at home and auto insurance. And then everybody pays more. It doesn't reduce costs. It actually increases across the board. There's currently four states in the country where credit is banned as a rating factor, and it has increased costs across those states, both in home and auto. So it sounds good on the surface, but the reality is risk-based pricing, which uses actuarial data of these credit-based insurance scores, is a valuable component of risk rating.
All right, let me ask you another question. If you can't answer it, I understand. Recently, Texas eliminated the need to have your car inspected annually. One of the biggest things that you would find in inspecting a car, the mechanics would find your treads are low on your car, and therefore you're more likely to skid during slick weather, slick streets. And so, but they decided we're going to get rid of the home car inspection because we don't like government interfering in our lives. Has that impacted what we would pay for car insurance?
Potentially, it could increase costs. We see that in Florida. Florida eliminated this. Actually, it's been more than two decades now. And Florida is one of the most expensive auto insurance markets in the country. So it's not going to reduce your costs, I could tell you that. Potentially increasing costs makes the roads potentially less safe for everybody. Less safe means more accidents, more claims, more cost of coverage.
All right, let's go to Tony on the phones. Tony, thanks for holding on. You're on the air.
Boy, you guys are talking about so many things. Windshield wipers and lights, your brake lights, and all these things were regulated by these inspections, which make the roads much, much safer. Going back to insurance companies, this is the elephant in the room, okay? And insurance companies are not there to protect us. Insurance companies are there to profit off of us, okay? That's something we haven't talked about, and that's the driving force behind everything that insurance does. The last part, I just want to say, how about a public option for people, working-class people, for driving insurance, right, car insurance, and also for flood or natural disaster insurance, a public option where the government charges and doesn't squeeze people for profits?
Well, we have something like that in Texas. We have two things like that in Texas. We have the FAIR plan, which is the homeowner insurance of last option. If you can't get your home insured, that's available, but they say it's skinny coverage and it's not cheap. Also, on the Texas Gulf Coast, we have the windstorm insurance program to try to make sure that we can, bounce back from natural disasters and things, which is a hybrid between a private and state-owned company. And they're in trouble. In the last legislative session, they approved that they can borrow $1 billion from the rainy day fund. Mark Friedlander, what about all that?
You made some very good points there. The bottom line is, yes, some of the state-backed programs are essential for those that can't get coverage in the private market, and both the FAIR Plan and the Windstorm Association, they present that role. They are available for homeowners that can't get coverage elsewhere. But typically, government-backed solutions do not work. Look at NFIP. It's been a fiscal disaster since the day it was created. There are battles in Congress today of whether they even want to keep the program because it's been such a fiscal mess, on top of the fact that now the new risk rating program that's driving up costs across the country. And then you look at the California FAIR Plan, really good example with the major wildfires we had in LA County at the beginning of the year. They incurred a major shortfall to pay claims. Government-backed solutions sound good on the surface. Typically, they're not cheaper, and they are a fiscal mess, and they don't have enough funds to pay their claims.
Well, it's, we have here in Texas, this one says that when they try to raise the rates for the Gulf Coast with the Texas Windstorm Insurance Program, people, you know, it's real expensive, and people say, we can't afford this. It becomes a political issue. But the finances are the finances. So therefore, if they got hit with the terrible hurricane, it wouldn't be able to pay out. And so we're wondering, is it solvent?
The state-backed programs, some are more solvent than others. But when they get hit with a major loss event, once again, going back to the LA fires, they don't have enough funds. But they do have mechanisms in place to pay those claims. For example, in California, there's now an assessment that will be tacked on to insurers across the state. And unfortunately, eventually policyholders will cover that assessment. So private insurance policyholders will cover the assessment of the public facing entity, the FAIR Plan. Not a good solution, obviously. It just does not work. The models just do not work for public backed insurance.
I'm going to try and squeeze in one last caller. Joan, we're tight on time, but you're on the air.
Yeah, thank you for having this. I'd like to take issue with the last comment of your speaker. Please look further afield than just the local jurisdictions of the United States. Try other parts of the world that have had government-backed insurance. And I think if you do not have to have competing with private insurance so that the market is bigger, it may change the dynamic. But I have three short questions. One is, how much of my insurance premium, my homeowner's insurance premium, goes to the profit for the company? Number two, how much of that premium goes to pay the CEO? And three, when is it time to move to a nonprofit model? And I'll take that off the air. Thank you.
Okay. Well, we have about a minute and a half left, Mark, for those really insightful questions.
I'll try to make this simple. The premiums do not pay the salaries. They don't pay for other operations. The premiums cover the losses. The way insurers make their money is through investments, through the investment markets. Those are the funds they use to operate. The premiums are used to pay the claims. And so say you take $1 million in, you have $1.5 million of claims, then you have a shortfall. And then the insurance company has to turn to either reinsurance or their capital reserves to pay claims. So insurers are not profiting off your premiums. Those premiums are there to cover losses. As I said, there's other ways insurers make money, and primarily it's through investment markets.
Okay.
That is the money that they're bringing in.
Is it possible to have a nonprofit in this industry?
I haven't seen that model anywhere. The other point I want to make, though, is that she talked about international. Most areas of the world are extremely underinsured. Compared to the U.S., it is a disastrous situation where most losses we see in other countries across the world don't have any insurance coverage or minimal coverage, meaning most of the losses are not covered. So I'm not sure what model she was referring to,
right. But
we've never seen a model in another country that is better than the private insurance model here in the U.S.
Mark Friedlander is the Director of Corporate Communications with the Insurance Information Institute. Mark, thanks for bringing so much good information to our air today. We really appreciate that.
Thanks so much for having me, Dave. Really appreciate it.
That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.